You're listening to Life in Deep Ellum's podcast.
All right, hey everyone, this is Joel, and I'm back here again with my buddy Chris. How you doing, man?
I'm great. I'm so excited. This is like, I've been looking forward to it all week.
Yeah, if you guys remember, we talked about last week, comedy and prophecy, how I talk about the prophetic voice that happens in comedy, because there's, you know, in prophecy in the Bible, which some will say that genre takes up about 25% of the Bible. It's pretty big junk. It's not primarily about the future, but about the present. It's not so much foretelling as it is forthtelling.
Yeah, that's perfect. I think it reveals something to us that's uncomfortable, right? Is what we talked about. And comedy is interesting because it helps us to laugh a little bit, right? We talked about that and how it helps us to swallow maybe a hard pill.
Yeah. And now we're gonna move into another genre, hip hop, which I know is a big passion of yours, but like I think about the artistic nature of hip hop, how it there's hooks, there's melodies, there's dancing, but buried in this art form, there's often a clear prophetic message.
Yeah.
And since you're the one who knows more about this, I'm going to let you kind of lead this convo.
Yeah, great. That sounds good. So I think one of the things that I was thinking about this week while I was, putting some ideas together was, first, like the prophets weren't, they were certainly foretellers and forthtellers, but I think they were also, one of the things I thought of was remixers, which is an interesting idea, right? Because they came out of a tradition, specifically the Jewish tradition of, there's the law and there's, the kingly tradition and the priests and all these other things that are going on. And so one of the things that I think you can see in the Old Testament is how they took older ancient sort of, whether it's scriptures or stories or whatever, and took little bits and pieces and remixed them to shed new light on their current, state of affairs. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. There's a pastoral element where they're trying to stay true to the word of God as revealed to them in Torah, but also they are allowing the imagination of the prophet to kind of enter in. When you read the prophets, it feels like you're reading poetry. You're not reading prose. You're reading very descriptive and flowery, often language that, and sometimes you kind of have to stop and read it two or three times and go, what is this really about?
That's interesting that you say that, because I think hip hop is very similar to that, right? Like if you didn't grow up in these certain situations, there are occasions where you come across like, certain references to things and you're like, I have no idea what mean by this.
I have a buddy, and a shout out to OB. His name's Oren. And he's a hip hop guy, and he created a playlist on Spotify for me called Mixka for Triska.
Oh, that's actually funny, because I just found that I was looking at his Spotify and I saw that playlist. So I started listening to it. Yeah.
He made that for me to teach me the ways of hip hop. And that's where I started learning about, I'm sorry, what's the word that when you start pulling out pieces of other songs?
Yeah, so like sampling.
Sampling, yes.
Yeah.
I also learned from him another word that I'm forgetting, but he talks about it's like rummaging or crate digging, where these old hip hop guys would go into old like record stores and just find some small sample, like from some obscure French opera singer or whatever, and they'd put that into their music. And then also there's a almost like the hip hop artists, they talk back and forth to each other in their music.
Yeah, and I think that's been true of hip hop since it sort of started. So like they started as samplers, they started by taking these old LPs and, maybe like, that tsukka tsukka, like that sound, that's very much hip hop, in the history of hip hop. But it's interesting because they're using these old forms of music, these older forms of music, to say something new, to shed light on the present day. So one guy, his name's Abraham Heschel. He wrote, above all the prophets that he's speaking of, these Old Testament prophets, they remind us of the moral state of a people, that is, few are guilty, but all are responsible. And so I think if you're okay with it, that might be a good jump off point to some samples or examples, samples or examples that I have of some hip hop songs that are prophetic.
Man. Yeah, bring it.
Okay, so I'm going to jump back in history. I'm going to do this in chronological order. So the first one I have is Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. So this is like that old school, like, do, do, do,
yeah.
do, do. Oh, yeah. You know, it's real fun.
To the edge, I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My son said, Daddy, I don't want to go to school because the teacher's a jerk. He must think I'm a fool. And all the kids smoke reefer. I think it'd be cheaper if I just got a job, learn to be a street sweeper.
It's got that old school feel, and it's got that cool, like, sort of hook that's like, that feels like kind of old, but like it never, ever sort of wears out. It's always fun to listen to. And it's one of the very first hip hop songs with a major sort of cultural message. I remember watching a documentary where, I think it was Ice Cube or somebody, he's talking about this song and he's going like, it like blew, oh no, it was Ice-T. It blew his mind, that a hip hop song could like speak so clearly into, you know, the present day. You know, it's interesting because this is one of those, songs that sort of features sex and money and violence, like a lot of hip hop does. What's interesting is it doesn't portray it positively. And so one of the things I thought about with this song was you spoke about apophatic theology this week at the gathering, and you talked about how sometimes reading the Bible is like, you need to read between the lines a little bit of scripture. So do you think that's a good comparison here?
Yeah, I could definitely see some of that at play. You know, I watched the YouTube video of this. I'd never heard of Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. And I'm just going, man, this is like brutal.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm reading Lamentations with some very uncomfortable pictures that he's painting. And once again, he's not doing it in that kind of ego boasting kind of look at me and I'm all that kind of posture.
Yeah,
he's inviting people into just the misery, the suffering that he and all his friends and homies, they all experience growing up. And that's one of those things where I can't imagine for the people who grew up in those environments and never had a voice, like a loud voice that was playing on radio stations, naming that experience for everyone.
Yeah.
I bet that was really surreal for people to experience that in such a pop way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I'm remembering correctly, this is directly from, you know, a lot of these guys are directly from the Bronx or like really rough parts of New York City. And I think it's just this perfect example of like, they're telling the truth about their own situation, but in a weird sort of way, just like Lamentations, like you said, it's like, it's a thing that like people can latch onto and go, that is an exact representation of my personal experience of the world, and somebody else is saying it, and it's a popular song. Like it's almost like you can dance to it, and that's sort of strange, you know. But it speaks to the human experience. So yeah, I think the next one that I have is an interesting one. Lots of people know the name Tupac Shakur, right?
Tupac, is he alive? Is he?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I think Kendrick talked about that in his last LPs. Nobody's sure. So actually, you sent me this interesting video that is a clip from Tupac. It's an interview.
They got trapped.
It's interesting how hip-hop rap music in the beginning, or a song like Grandmaster Flash is the message, where basically they were saying, you know, it's like a jungle sometimes. I wish, you know, I wonder how I keep from going under. The whole root of what that song was basically saying, look, these are the problems here. You know, and here we are 10 years or plus later. The problems are still there, and the intensity of the music has built to the no hope, the I don't give a attitude. How did we get from Grandmaster Flash, the message, to where we are now in hip-hop?
Again, you have to be logical. You know, if I know that in this hotel room they have food every day, and I'm knocking on the door every day, to eat, and they tell, and they open the door, let me see the party, let me see like them throwing salami all over the, I mean, just like throwing food around, where they're telling me there's no food in here. You know what I'm saying? Every day, I'm standing outside trying to sing my way in. You know what I'm saying? We are hungry, please let us in. We are hungry, please let us in. After about a week, that song is gonna change to, we hungry, we need some food. After 2-3 weeks, it's like, you know, give me all the food, we're breaking out the door. And after a year, and you just like, you know what I'm saying? I'm picking the lock, coming through the door, blasting, you know what I'm saying?
So my experience with Tupac was he came on the scene when I was in high school, and this was, in my, you know, I grew up in white suburbs, and so I was, had the similar feelings that a lot of people had around, oh, this is glorifying violence. Oh, this is, glorifying, really inappropriate sorts of lifestyles.
Yeah.
But I watched this video later on in life, and I began to see behind, the words, and Tupac explains the anger and the frustration and the he uses the word hungry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you start thinking about that, you start realizing that anger is a legitimate emotion, and it occurs primarily, most of the time, it's attached to injustice.
Yeah.
And so when you read the prophets, there is anger there.
Yeah.
And I think it's legitimate. That isn't to say that, you know, everything that every word in Tupac's songs are things that I agree with, but I can absolutely validate the pain that he's coming from using artistic expression to really validate. I think about the song Brenda's Got a Baby, where he talks about this horrible situation of a girl throwing away her baby.
Yeah.
Right. He read about it in a newspaper, and he writes a song. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that me and my friends at our church would read and go, oh, that's awful. That those communities obviously are so lost. But he sings this song where it paints the story of going, basically, anyone could be that girl.
Yeah.
Any of us were born in that situation, would we have made different choices? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's interesting to me too. I think that song is interesting, but then like, if you listen to lots and lots of his interviews, like he has very clear ideas about what's wrong with America. Because he grew up in, you know, maybe rough spots. And he's passionate in his music, clearly, but I think sometimes his messages maybe come across even better or at least more clearly, in these interviews. He's clearly angry, like you said. But I think he has an interest in like almost drumming up like a resistance, and that may or may not be like violent or whatever, but at least resistance in people's minds. Like, this is the real thing. There are real race problems. There are real problems with police. There are real problems in our communities with poverty and hunger and drugs and
opportunities. Yeah.
Yeah. And so sometimes like when you speak, I think, truthfully about violence, it can be scary, but it can also be revealing of a deeper truth about our American, you know, current situation.
To be quite honest with you, until I started understanding my own privilege, I couldn't see those truths.
Yeah.
I needed to take away the veil of my privilege to begin to see, oh, what this is really not just a black thing. This is also a black voice talking about a human thing.
Yeah.
Like the pain and the suffering and the marginalization and the racism and the inequality and the inequity. And so I know for me that sometimes when I hear pushback from people, that there's probably some work that we have to do with our own lenses before we can really hear the message clearly.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, that actually brings me back to our point about comedy too. So we made this point about how laughing sort of makes some harsh truths a little bit more palatable. And I think hip hop may even do that a little bit now that I think about it. There's this idea that like, it's got an awesome beat, you know, and everybody loves the way it sounds. And then, you know, it kind of draws you in. And then if you really listen, for those who have ears to hear, you know, it's like, you can go, oh shoot, he's talking about something or she's talking about something way more interesting than just like a cool beat.
For the conscious hip hop, right?
That's true. That's true.
Some people would say, "Oh, I just like the beat, even though it's just like trash that they're listening to." But that works both ways. That same beat draws people into some really deep wisdom sometimes, and I hear hip hop doing that a lot.
Yeah, that's a good point. Soulja Boy Tell 'Em is probably not a prophetic voice in the hip hop community. So I said he or she because I think that there are also great female MCs out there. And the next one I want to talk about is Lauryn Hill. What do you think about Lauryn Hill?
Oh man, her album Miseducation of Lauryn Hill came out when I was in college, and I listened to it some then, but it's been in the past 5 years. I've just kept listening over and over again. My go-tos when I put her album on is Everything Is Everything and Zion. I just love her music.
Yeah. So many great tracks. You know, she came from a previous group called the Fugees, and they had some great music out. And then, you know, she went and did her own thing. There's a lot of history around there that we're not going to get into. But, you know, I think what's interesting about this album is that she had some actually serious, like, religious undertones in some of her lyrics and some of her writing. And before this, often, like, I think religious lyrics were a little bit like seen as out of touch or cheesy or just like kind of tongue in cheek. But she doesn't do that. She does something really interesting. So I'm curious, like, what's your personal experience of religious hip hop? If that's a thing.
I mean, I grew up, you know, even white evangelical. So it's DC talk.
Classic. Yeah.
I don't know. It's like a sanitized version of hip hop.
Yeah. Although I will say Jesus Freak could be considered a pretty great album.
I listened to that album. Yeah. I mean, I loved it, but you know, looking back on it and knowing way more about the history of hip hop that I do now, that it's not just about the beats. I mean, that's a big part of it, but it's also about the place from which one is speaking and the place from which one is writing. And I look back on most DC talk and a lot of it's just kind of like happy or, you know, it's
love praise. Is a verb.
Love, come on. It's spelled L-U-V. Or it's very like on the nose kind of preaching. Like here's a song about don't have premarital sex.
Yeah.
And it's like reading Paul's letters. Like most evangelicals don't like to read the prophets because they don't make sense to them. It's too poetic and they have to work hard to interpret it. They'd rather have Paul just tell them straight up, here's what I mean. Don't do this, do this. And so that's what kind of like Christian hip hop sounded to me.
Yeah. That's a great point. So, you know, these other hip hop artists, especially a couple of the ones that we're going to get into here in a second, I think they do that, but a little more subtly in a little bit more of a way that can kind of like dig at you a little bit better. Right. The song by Lauryn Hill that came to my mind was Final Hour.
Things gonna change, it's apparent and all transparent, gonna be seen through. Let God redeem you, keep your dean true. You can get the green too, watch out who you cling to. Observe how the queen doing. I remain calm, reading the 73rd Psalm. Cause with all that's going on, I got the world in my palm. Now you can get the money, you can get the power. Keep your eyes on the final hour. You can get the money, you can get the power. Keep your eyes on the final hour.
One of the things that I noticed about the second verse of the song is that it sounds very similar to Mary's Magnificat. Can you tell us what that is?
So that's the song that Mary sings after she accepts, like, you know, the angel tells her that you're going to bear the Messiah. And she says, basically, I'm the Lord's servant, doing to me is what you say. And she sings this song that glorifies the Lord, but it also has some prophetic undertones to it, a song about like what this Emmanuel is bringing to the first century Jewish context. He has scattered the proud and the conceit of their heart. He has put down the mighty from their thrones. So it has that kind of element. I think you had a line there that jumped out to you, right? From Lauryn Hill's song.
Yeah. The line that gets me every time is I'm about to change the focus from the richest to the brokest, which is so good. Just that idea that, like, you know, is this experience right here? It's people who are poor and who are hungry and who are maybe wanting more. And it's out of those kinds of communities that good hip hop grows out of. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like what Lauren is saying in that song is, hey, it's okay. Seek the money, seek the power. Like, empower yourself. I think she has a really deep spirituality that also is like in solidarity, right, with her people.
Yeah.
But she's also like, hey, but there's gonna be a final hour, and we got to remember there's things bigger.
Yeah, something deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good.
That's a prophetic voice right there. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. There's money and power are fine, but they're not going to get you there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So after Lauryn Hill, you know, we're going to jump ahead like 20 something years, I think, or maybe even more. Some of our listeners probably know who, Chance the Rapper is. I'm a big, big fan of Chance the Rapper. In fact, I, credit Acid Rap, his second mixtape with, being the thing that got me into contemporary hip hop, like for real.
Wow.
Yeah. So, one of the things that's interesting is that now he's taken a very religious turn, and he sort of paved the way for like Kanye doing King and all this other stuff. But I would say that Chance, couldn't have done what he did without Lauryn Hill doing what she did in her album. Do you agree?
Yeah, that's interesting. Like when you brought up that idea to me, I was like, I could see that. Like Lauryn Hill kind of cut down some of the jungle for Chance to be able to walk through, because I mean, Chance, his story out of Chicago, he had a very big church that kind of backed him and so helped him kind of get over that hump where his music made it through the noise. And he definitely has a very kind of authentic and unapologetic religious tone. I mean, coloring book is full of biblical images. How great is our God just borrows a Chris Tomlin song.
That's so great. It's so great. You know, and coloring book's interesting too, not only because it like specifically overtly references biblical imagery, but he also uses like gospel choirs to back him in so many of those songs.
Like a Kirk Franklin kind of.
Yeah. So, oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
very gospel.
So, but I don't want to talk about like a specifically, I mean, he has biblical imagery in this song, but I want to talk about an unreleased song that he's done called First World Problems. This is one of my favorite of his songs. It's never been released. He didn't do it in the album after Coloring Book, which he said he would, and I'm still holding a grudge.
Yeah.
Against him. But you mentioned that you watched this live, I think.
Yeah, it was on Colbert. I was just like, oh man, Chance is singing. And he was he had that moment where he's like, oh dude, I'm about to drop something on you guys.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, are you ready? You ain't ready for this. And it was beautiful. It was I mean, the performance of it was great, had this awesome build to it. But like it was one of those moments where he was kind of like in the first couple of verses, he's criticizing himself, like this getting caught up in the hustle. Yeah. Talks about how his kid doesn't even recognize him without his hat. And
he says, I'm a rich excuse for a father. You just can't tour a toddler. She just needs her papa. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of when artists of any kind do that, especially though hip hop, because hip hop has so much of that kind of braggadocious kind of feel to it. When it's almost like the Eminem movie 8 Mile, right? Yes. At the end, where he's rapping, and the way he brings down the rap battles, he starts tearing himself down, so the other guy doesn't have anything else to tear down.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? And so it's like when I hear that in a hip hop song, I was like, oh wait, all right, something's going on here. What's the message?
The scene snapping, and I'm the team capping. No more knee slapping or shoe shining or shoe signing until the dream happens. I'm just gonna keep rapping, and y'all just keep clapping and keep happening. Like Flint got clean water, and y'all don't got teen daughters and black friends and gay cousins. Y'all just don't say nothing. Know that the day coming, knees bowed, tongues confessing. The last ones getting first dibs on blessings. Now these the first world problems that make up. Keep on playing, we gon' shake this up. Keep on telling us we making it up. The American dream, may you never wake up. The day is on its way, it couldn't wait no more.
Here it comes.
Ready or not, ready or not.
Yeah, I love the hook. So you know the big chorus is the day is on its way, couldn't wait no more, here it comes. And you know, I think when I saw this for the very first time, I was just like, dude, Chance just brought America to church, and they didn't know they were going to church. This mm-hmm. is so great. You know, it's one of those like, oh, that's giving me some chills. I didn't expect that. Mm-hmm. But I think that idea that, you know, this language is very specifically charismatic. When I was a teenager, I grew up in like some Pentecostal, some charismatic, some, you know, some mix of these two. But I was also an Air Force kid. And so occasionally we actually attended something called specifically the gospel service. And this was a traditionally Black service. And I can remember hearing them say those sorts of things, like mm-hmm. almost like to the letter, this mm-hmm. kind of a line. So do you feel like that's like reminiscent of your own charismatic like upbringing?
Yeah, 100%. There's specifically, as I understood charismatic expression through Black church, and you know, in college I had a lot of African-American friends, and I learned that the music styles weren't different just in kind of musicality and the very different chords that they might play versus the music I played in, you know, I heard in white churches. But there was a focus on the future, like a future-oriented faith.
Yeah.
That deliverance is coming.
Yeah.
You know, like a real hope-filled kind of communal experience.
Yeah, I wonder too, I was kind of thinking about this a little bit, like if that comes out of these, like the spirituals that were very, very, we all know about them now, but like, you know, slaves on plantations would sing these songs about deliverance and mm-hmm. hope for the future and these sorts of things. I think it's very much in line, you know, sort of with this.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And then, you know, the next thing I love about this song is that he goes really hard. So the pre-chorus, you know, it has this line that he says, this is first world problems that inwards make up. So, you know, this idea that like America, white America specifically, is saying all these things you complain about, those are not real things. These are first world problems. And then he just goes super hard in the third verse. And he says, you know, you act like y'all don't have Flynn doesn't have clean water, and y'all don't have teen daughters and Black friends and gay cousin. Y'all just don't say nothing. I think it's like he's just like directly calling out, you know,
yeah.
You don't get to say that these aren't problems. They are problems.
Yeah. For me, I think when I hear Chance kind of take that kind of position, especially in such a broad televised way, that is like the prophet stepping into the spotlight and just like, all right, I got one message I can say. I gotta make this count.
So that brings us to my final reference. I would be completely remiss to talk about prophecy and hip hop and not talk about Kendrick Lamar. What do you think?
Dude, you love some Kendrick, don't you?
I do. He's my boy. I love Kendrick so much. He's actually, you know, I don't feel like I understood him super, super well. I loved Good Kid, Mad City, which is his, you know, mm-hmm. it's not his first album, but it's his first big album.
Yeah. Yes. Post K-Dot, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And then To Pimp a Butterfly was an album that was like almost like impenetrable to me. It was very difficult to understand. I loved the music, but it was just hard to understand. And then you, last year, you referred me to a podcast called Dissect with Cole Kushner, and he mm-hmm. has a whole season where he dissects each song line by line. It's like I mean, for I'm an Enneagram 5, so like that's my bread and butter to go through something like that. So
dude, it was like a life hack for white people.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's Cole so Krishna true. Just like said, all right, all you white people who don't understand, here, let me show you what hip hop is.
And I'm gonna spoon feed you. Yeah.
And I learned so much from that, just specifically that first season where he went through To Pimp a Butterfly. I learned so much about Kendrick, but not just Kendrick. I learned about Compton. I learned about the context. I learned about so much of the history and how many times even Kendrick would like sample Tupac. And I was like, I would have never known that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, you know, they'd like chop these samples up and they do weird things with them. So it's almost hard, like, unless you are really, really versed, you don't really know what's going on. So do you know like some of the story behind To Pimp a Butterfly, like what's kind of going on in Kendrick's sort of, mind space?
Yeah. I mean, only because of that podcast, and there's just that, how, you know, the Pimp a Butterfly kind of has a cocoon phase, right?
Yeah.
And kind of a caterpillar phase and a butterfly phase where, Kendrick's kind of telling his own story of evolution, of maturing.
Yeah. Yeah. He's trying to get through, I think this idea of like what it means to be famous too, right? He comes out of the Good Kid, Mad City era, and all of a sudden, you know, he's probably become super rich and he's going to all these shows and, he's being presented, a pretty heavy like materialism, right? In his own life.
Meanwhile, he still has homies that are like dying in the streets because they got shot, and he's still wrestling with, his loyalty to his friends back in the hood and touring in these super fancy hotels. I can't imagine the dichotomy of the worlds he lived in.
So the downer of the song is called You, and that's an interesting song, right? Because it's a little bit weird and it's kind of like, oh, I don't know if I want to listen to this, but that's where he talks about his friends being in the hospital, and then he doesn't actually go visit his friend. He FaceTimes him instead, and then he's it's this whole night where he's like drinking and getting drunk and he's depressed, and then all of a sudden the song sort of shifts and it goes to the song All Right.
Yeah.
All's my life I has to fight, all's my life I hard times like yeah, bad trips like yeah, Nazareth, I'm f***ed up, homie, you f***ed up, but if God got us, then we gon' be alright.
We gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. Do you hear me? Do you feel me? We gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. Huh? We gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. Do you hear me? Do you feel me? We gon' be alright.
And when I wake up, I recognize you looking at me for the pay cut. But how much I be looking at you?
Is the banger, right? It's like the there's one other like sort of high end song in that album, but All Right's like it's unique in its place in our social consciousness because it's widely recognized as the anthem of the Black Lives Matter movement. Yeah. Do you know that?
Yeah, I did, and how it kind of like gained so much traction during Ferguson and onward.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of things once 2020 came around, there's all these websites that are like that literally the top number one song of the decade, no matter where you went, was All Right by Kendrick Lamar.
Yep.
And so that song's great, but then he's actually got a performance on the BET Awards that's referenced later by Fox News and all this crazy stuff. But this particular performance is so interesting because it uses all this evocative imagery. Have you seen this video?
Yeah, they got like dancers waving American flags everywhere. So if you just glance at it, it looks like a patriotic service. And then you see like this all graffitied up police car and he's like standing on top of it. And it's just like, it's this, it has a mixture of metaphors. It feels like someone's just weaving different colors into this tapestry. And it's so much going, it's almost overwhelming to watch. There's so much going on.
Yeah, which I think he's going for specifically, like, the stage is a metaphor for what America is.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe even what America could be or what it makes us feel like. And it's got that Tupac sort of feel where he's evoking anger because, you know, he feels like there are some police officers that mistreat the Black community at much higher rates than white people.
Yep.
You know, and then you've got this idea that, like, America could be better. It should be better than it currently is.
And I find that super interesting because it feels like what the kind of the performance art that we talked about last week that prophets would do. They would do almost like object lessons, or they would evoke emotions. It was very dramatic in the way many of these prophets, I mean, these prophets were walking into like king's courts, right? And the most powerful places of their culture, which you could argue that's what hip hop is doing as well when it's on these stages that are being televised.
Yeah.
You don't go in there and bunt or look to walk. You look to hit a home run, right?
Yeah. And yeah.
That's how I see that as you know, Kendrick stepping up to the plate and going, "All right, we're going to make this count."
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of reminds me of the story of David right after Bathsheba, right? When what's the prophet's name that comes to him?
Nathan.
Nathan comes to him and he's, you know, he tells this very evocative story and David's like, "This guy needs to die."
And Nathan's like, "And you're the man."
Yeah, yeah.
Bum, bum, so bum.
Yeah. yeah. And one of the things I love about Kendrick too, and I think we've referenced it with all these artists, is he doesn't just point at America, right? He doesn't just say, "This is what's wrong with you guys." To Pimp a Butterfly specifically is I think it's a reflection on his own demons, his own issues, his own, you know, personal struggle with materialism and, you know, what fame looks like for him and all these things and how that's universal to the human experience.
What do you think? It's almost like I feel like what he's inviting me into, he's like saying, "Hey, look, I am self-aware, but I'm also going to give myself permission to make mistakes."
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's really brave. That's a brave thing to do.
Yeah. And vulnerability, right? The vulnerability of Kendrick helps us to see our own selves a little bit better. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I couldn't agree more that the album was not only one that had a prophetic voice to the world around us, right? The culture and the context and a message that he felt like he was advocating for his people, obviously coming out of Compton, which had a very kind of dark history with very specific racial programs that just attacked their communities.
Yeah.
But also he was saying, "Look, this isn't just going to be me pointing fingers everywhere else. Like, I'm going to evolve too. Like, I'm calling us all to grow, not just you."
Yeah. We can all be the problem. We can also all be the solution to this problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the end, I see this as the Hebrew word for prophet. And as we've said, prophecy isn't always for the future. It's primarily for the present. Just like Nathan was confronting King David, that was everything to do with what was happening right then and there. And that's where I see the word Navi, that's the Hebrew word. And translated most simply, it just means seer.
Yeah.
How do you see this word, just seer? How does that connect to the hip hop artist?
Yeah, I think it connects directly to all these people that we've talked about. I think, you know, there's plenty of other examples I could have given, but all of these ones that I've referenced, I think, are they see not only what's going on in themselves. They don't only see what's going on in their own communities or even society as a whole, but they also see a better world, right? And how that better world may be able to call us to be better right now.
I love that. Yep. And thanks so much, Chris, for taking me on this journey with hip hop.
Oh, so fun.
Yeah.